All right, true confession time. What you just heard wasn't really said by Donald Trump. Same holds true with who you at least thought were President Biden, Taylor Swift, and Bob Costas speaking. I created that audio through artificial intelligence software. Rather easily, too, by the way. While that's something that people are in fear of when it comes to artificial intelligence, on the flip side, major companies in numerous industries are investing heavily in AI, as it's called. The evidence of this came to us this past week from Wall Street, where the AI tech company NVIDIA simply crushed earnings expectations. Our next guest joins us to discuss what AI specifically, as he writes about in his new book, Generative AI Offers, precautions that are vital, understanding that's needed. He shares facts, ideas about all this and more in his new book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know. He is the inventor of the portable tablet computer, person behind online auctions, who today teaches about AI at Stanford University. Mr. Jerry Kaplan, how are you today, Jerry?
Great, Chris. Nice to talk to you.
JerryKaplan.com, and learn more about the educational opportunities at Stanford University, stanford.edu. So, as I said, your title specifically says generative artificial intelligence. How is that different versus the general term of artificial intelligence?
Sure. Well, generative AI is different from earlier waves of artificial intelligence in two ways. First of all, it makes predictions where the previous waves were really about what's called classification or recognition. So the previous waves, you could train a system, you show it a picture, you say, is there a cat in the picture? Or is this a picture of a cat or a dog? And it would tell you it's a cat or it's a dog. That's the recognition or classification. The new systems adapt the same technology in a very, very interesting and valuable way. You train them, and then they can project new things out into the future. And so that's why you're able to converse or chat with these systems. You put in a prompt, you ask it a question, and it looks in its complex internal structure and says, given those, given that you've said that, what's the most likely thing that a person would say in response to that? That's the prediction. And the same thing's true with the pictures that everybody's seeing now, these fake pictures, which can be super realistic and really good. You know, you say, I would like to see a picture of X. Well, it's seen tons of pictures of X, and now it makes a new picture of X. So that's basically what it's about.
So in a more, I guess, layperson way of explaining things, what's soon to be, I guess we can say soon to be heritage technology, that relies on order and structure, where generative AI doesn't require that in order to do what it can possibly do, potentially do, be directed to do.
Yeah, I'll accept that provisionally, yes. But the other thing about generative AI that's different is it's much, much more general than the previous waves of AI. So the same program that can tell you about ancient Egypt can suggest what to make for dinner from a picture of what's in your refrigerator, or it could design a logo for you, or it could draft a Father of the Bride toast. It could build a website for your new business. It's the same program. In old AI, you know, this is a program that figures out whether or not where the trees are in the road, whether there are any pedestrians. And that's very specific. This is very general.
One of the chapters you have dedicated to one of the elements of generative artificial intelligence, they're called large language models, LLM. Mm-hmm. What role do they play? How crucial of a role are they? And what do they bring to the table when it comes to generative artificial intelligence?
Okay, well, LLMs, this is something you don't need to know, contrary to the title of my book. An LLM was just the academic name, the large language models, for what we now call chatbots.
Okay.
It's the basis for the chatbots. It's the model internally is a large language model, and when you talk to it, now you're able to, you know, get a response in plain language.
When it comes to anything new, I mean, we can go through all throughout history, going back to Henry Ford and the assembly line, there are fears and myths that come about. What's myth about generative artificial intelligence do you think you best address with your book?
Well, when most people think about artificial intelligence, they think of robots and machines, like you see in TV and in the movies, like the Terminator. And they think, oh, my God, is that where this is going? Are these robots going to become so intelligent and powerful that they're going to rise up and take over? And they're going to become aware and think, hey, I'm being exploited here, and I don't like these little biological creatures called human beings, and I'm going to wipe them out. That's what people worry about when they think about artificial intelligence. That's complete nonsense, and it's not going to happen. And so that's the biggest myth that I think I'd like to disabuse people of. It's a very powerful technology. It can do a lot of good, and it can be used for a lot of bad stuff as well, as you're probably aware. But there is no they there. So they are not coming for us.
So to put it again in a simple way, any mechanism operating with generative artificial intelligence is not a threat because it doesn't want anything from us.
Exactly. It doesn't want anything. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't have any real opinions. It'll express opinions, but that's just a reflection of, you know, what it's been trained on. It just sits there and responds to whatever you want. Now, that's not to say it can't be dangerous, but it's dangerous because it gets in the hands of bad people, and it's a powerful tool, and those bad people can use those tools to do bad things. So that's something we are going to have to deal with. But that's very different from sort of the technology itself being somehow inherently a danger to humanity.
So Jerry Kaplan with his new book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know, jerrykaplan.com. He also teaches about AI at Stanford University. Stanford.edu is that university's website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And what you just said about the potential for wrongdoing to take place by those who want to do wrongdoing, there are some who say that the law has yet to even catch up with the heritage traditional internet. So what type of responsibility and heavy workload is this new technology going to be placed on those who make the laws? And at the same time, do we have to be concerned about ignorant limitations being placed on GAI through overcompensation and going beyond the reach of what laws should go, and then thereby stifling a new technology?
Well, you're hitting on exactly the right issues here. The question is, what's the right way to regulate and approach this? Because this is a powerful new technology. Now, the good news is we've just been through the social media revolution, or we might say we're in the middle of it. Everybody knows what that is, you know, with Facebook and Instagram and all that. But the approach that was taken by the government was hands-off. Let's let these companies figure it all out, and we'll deal with problems later. And look what happened. You know, we've got all kinds of issues and problems that these systems are creating. So this time, the government is on it. There are commissions, there are groups, there's executive orders, there are all kinds of meetings that are taking place. So they're trying to make sure that they don't try to close the barn door after the horse has left on this one and get out ahead of the problems that are likely to occur. Now, the problem, as you point out, is nobody really knows for sure what kinds of problems are necessarily going to occur. A couple of them are clear, and we're going to have issues with them, but most of them are probably yet to be discovered. So they're also trying to find a middle ground between sort of clamping down on the technology that prevents it from being used in very powerful and useful ways, and good ways, while at the same time, they're trying to make sure that they basically, let me rephrase this, they don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's probably a good way to put it. In my opinion, actually, we're doing a pretty good job on this. The current White House has assembled the right group of people, and they've put out regular guidelines, and they're really working on this kind of a problem. And I think they're doing it in a real balance between a light touch being too light and a heavy touch, which would damage the use of the potential benefits of the technology.
Question that brings about, for me at least, is should generative artificial intelligence be overseen as a technology would be, or because of what GAI can do, it's basically capable of creative thought. Do you have to look at it in some aspect as oversight as you would with a person or a body of people?
Well, the best way to think about generative AI is it's a new wave of automation. And automation has certain kinds of effects that we've been through previous waves of automation. This is the same kind of thing. It'll have a tendency initially to put people out of work. That's what automation is for. But it makes us a lot more productive. And it makes us wealthier. And, you know, that will pick up things in the job market as well. But it's really a powerful tool. And, you know, tools can be used in different ways. You know, you can use a knife for lots of, you know, cutting up food and doing all kinds of wonderful things. But you can also kill people with it. And I think that this is an issue for generative AI as well. You know, we're going to see, we're already seeing these so-called deep fakes, if you're familiar with that is. It's going to play a big role in the spread of disinformation and lies. As you said in your intro, you know, the fact you can fake somebody's voice means you can't count on the fact that you're hearing what the real person really said. Also, these systems tend to exhibit certain kinds of biases and discrimination. Why they do that's really very interesting. So there's a series of issues that we're going to have to deal with this new technology. But on balance, I'd like to give your audience some comfort. This is going to be a tremendous productivity aid, and it's going to take over our lives in the same way that the internet did, because it's just so useful. I think this is going to be widely used by everybody for all kinds of things, in education, in healthcare, in law, you know, in personal relationships, in therapy, in caring for the elderly. It's going to have wonderful, wonderful uses in all of those areas. But being a powerful tool, it also can be used for bad.
And again, going to the brighter side of things to try to get away from any kind of fear factor, which there's enough of that with this technology as it is. It's a technology for the many, not for the elite. I mentioned how major companies through NVIDIA and their AI chips are investing heavily in this technology. But if you were always apprehensive about trying to create your own website, GoDaddy, one of the hosting companies, is already implementing an AI system to make it easier than it's ever been before to create your own website for your business. If you're one of those who has been lagging behind because you don't feel you have the technology or the money to come up with a respectable, effective website. So it's something for the many, not for the elite.
That's absolutely true. And one of the interesting things about this particular wave of artificial intelligence is it's something that tends to work best when it's used in concert with human beings. So, for example, I think that 10 years from now, if you want to write a paper or a book report or something like that, you're going to use this as a tool in the sense that you'll say, here's what kind of things I want to say. Give me a first draft, or give me some suggestions of things that I ought to talk about, or give me some things I need to understand in order to do a better job. And it'll spit out a draft for you, like an intelligent assistant. Now, you're probably not just going to take that and use it, but it's a great starting point. It's a great for brainstorming. And that's something that can be used in almost any profession all around the world.
Having talked with James Patterson over the years so many times and the level of productivity he has done with his books, I can imagine him sitting there thinking, where was this 10, 15 years ago?
Sure. Well, if I could liken it to something in the past, it might help your listeners to understand this. Think about the invention of photography. Before we had photography, if you wanted a picture of something, somebody had to draw it. And if you wanted a portrait of your family, you had to go to a portrait painter. And, you know, when it was invented in the mid-1800s, all of a sudden you could take your whole family in the afternoon down to a center. This is actually what they did in the mid-1800s. You pay $5, you set everybody down, and the photographer presses a button, and there's your family portrait. I mean, that was an enormous change in productivity and in use of the technology. And, of course, photography has exploded. You know, photographs are almost free today, and they're used for all kinds of things, any kind of visual applications, and everybody's got a great camera built into their phone. Well, I think this is going to have a similar class of impact. There's a whole set of things that take a lot of time and attention for people to write product brochures or to research things or to put together a legal brief, all that kind of stuff. And it's just going to be like pressing a button in 5 or 10 years. Now, it's not going to give you a great, perfect result, but a good result, and you can use it as a good starting point.
One last question, because, again, this is looking forward maybe of we think of technology as stationary. And at least at this point, same could be true with GAI. It's where it is doing what's around it. It's probably already being developed. I just haven't seen it in the background research I did for this segment. But if you add cameras and microphones to GAI, you're basically opening the world to this one element of intelligence. And that could be a whole different picture for what you start off with versus what becomes of it.
Boy, Chris, are you right? And when people say, well, what's the next step? What's going to happen next? Right now, you need to understand that these systems are trained on enormous collections of data that are like scraped off the internet or, you know, a million books and things like that. But therefore, their understanding of the world is filtered through human experience. It's a little bit like a baby suckling at a mother's breast. That's all it's fed. That's all it eats. Well, when the next wave, we're going to connect these systems up to real-time sensors, and that's a fancy word for cameras and microphones and things like that. And once you do that, they can figure out their own ideas about how the world really works, and they can explain that to us. That's what's so cool about this technology. It's very, very accessible. And so I don't know what's going to happen and what that's going to be like, but it's almost certainly going to be a kind of revolution in human knowledge and be able to advance, you know, scientific endeavors and our understanding of the world in ways that today we really can't even imagine.
I think what Jerry does with his book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know, you go into it thinking, what if? But then after you look at how he addresses topics of society, topics of industries, topics of from healthcare, the legal system, education, oversight of a new and blossoming technology, I think that fire inside you is going to ignite and you'll say, instead of what if, when? How about now? Well, that now is getting closer and closer. And that's why the work of people like what Jerry does with generative artificial intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know, is very important, because it gives you the stability of facts and knowledge, reality, along with the potential and the warnings. Yep, there are warnings, because as it is with anything new, there is potential for wrongdoing. But that knowledge can prevent at least the majority of their wrongdoing. You can find out more about Jerry and his work at jerrykaplan.com. He is also a teacher of AI at Stanford University. Their website, stanford.edu. Jerry Kaplan, in a very concise, user-friendly way for the tech and the non-tech, you have made AI a lot more understandable and a lot more easily embraceable. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, great. Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.